tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey everybody, welcome into another Penny Dreadful After Show right here on AfterBuzzTV.com and YouTube.com/AfterBuzzTV. Hit subscribe whether you're listening on iTunes or watching on YouTube. I know you probably have already, but if you are relatively new to AfterBuzz, we would love you to subscribe. Follow us along with everything Penny Dreadful. We are talking And Hell Itself, My Only Foe. Today, I am Bobby DeMuro. Next to me, Marissa Serafini.
Hello.
And across the table from us, Sarah Stratton.
Hello.
And Roxy Stryer.
Hi, everyone.
Ladies, how are we doing? What do we think of this episode? I'm going to tell you right now, best Penny Dreadful episode I've seen season one and two combined.
So, wow. Just in general.
Ooh. Ever.
High praise. That's, high yes. praise.
It's up there for me, definitely. I will give it my highest ranking for season two. I don't know if it's my highest ranking overall.
I agree with that. It felt like a season one episode to me, which is mm-hmm. what I really loved about it, in terms of the intensity. We really, really turned up a notch this week, and I'm so excited to see where we're going with the finale.
Yeah, and we should turn up because the finale's next week. In some ways, this could have been a finale this week. It would have left a lot of strings untied. But to me, maybe it's just my initial reaction because we just watched it, and I'm on the edge of my seat still. Mm-hmm. If this were the finale this week, I would have been like, I have a lot of questions, but okay.
This yeah. would have been but a completely fine finale.
It would have been
a painful, annoying finale. But I think part of that also comes from, I think we're going to see more wrapped up next week since we just found out that they got renewed.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
maybe they filmed this with the intention of not knowing they were going to get renewed.
But they always knew for season two that they had a 10-episode order. So, and this was episode 9. So I think it was definitely intentional to have a 2-part finale type of ending to a season.
No, I don't think that's what she's saying. She's saying that this, they thought, could have been the end of the entire series. So they really wanted to make it as strong as they possibly could.
Because they didn't know they were going to season 3.
Yeah. And next episode.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Well, we got a lot to talk about today. We're going to run this down in kind of a creative way, we think. A little bit different today. Not too much, but, well, we're proud of it. We'll tell you in a minute. Like I said, hit subscribe on YouTube and iTunes if you haven't already. And we at AfterBuzz bring you guys a ton of free content. We're happy to do it. We're proud to do it. We love doing it. And we are happy to have your comments and views and all that good stuff because you guys are awesome at home, especially on this show, which brings me to a couple points. The first one is this. We are live streaming this right now on YouTube. We got a ton of people in the chat already. Sarah is on the laptop looking at everything. So if you have a comment, if you want to just say hi, if you want to talk about the show as we make our way through it, comment in the chat box on YouTube on the live stream. We're going to respond to those, read some of them. You know, you guys know how we do. And the other one is, before we continue, I have a question for you guys at home and y'all. Does driving matter to you? There are over 4 million miles of road in the U.S. to find out, and that is a lot of ground to cover. That's a lot of highways, freeways, wrong ways, and long ways. And they're all there waiting to be driven on. So, do you take the left turn at Albuquerque, or do you just keep going? Do you wake up early Sunday morning for a drive before the traffic does, or do you take the long, winding road home for a change? If driving matters to you, just get out and drive. And why? Well, because driving matters. Mazda. And thank you very much to Mazda for doing that. Like I said, we give you guys a lot of free content, have a lot of amazing sponsorships and partnerships and things like that. So it's great to support the people who support us, if you guys are watching us here at AfterBuzz. We got a lot to talk about today, ladies.
Yeah, we do.
We're going to break this down.
So
Sarah, we're going to give her a little credit for this, a little shout out, had the idea to do this as opposed to, don't give me a weird look.
I don't know where you're going.
No,
with
this is good.
I still don't know where he's going.
Usually we break down by character or topic. Today we're going to do the same thing, but the topics are locations. I think that's a great idea because the locations play a role here, and you can kind of progress through the episode with the location. So let's start in the first location. We see Roper. We're at the Cutwife's house, the old shack. What are you smiling about?
I'm just a little surprised with you.
Why is that?
Usually you try to steal all the credit, but you actually gave credit where credit was due tonight.
Only with Sarah, because she, like, I've got Roxy, like, wrapped around my little finger. I've got you, I'm okay with.
Oh, you
Sarah.
Mean Marissa. Marissa's wrapped around the little finger. I'm not yes. wrapped around anybody's little finger.
My credit and all the references I read.
Jeez, yes, my brain's not working.
That applies to the show.
But yes, Roxy, I'm going to play nice today.
Okay, we'll see how that works for you.
This could be a really long show.
Oh, all right. Location one, Roper. What do we make of the fight scene? Kicks ass. Literally and figuratively. Great scene.
Okay, first of all, cinematography, thematically wise, that was amazing because you notice there was no music. It was all literally hard-hitting sound effects. And literally going from those two fighting in such a dark place after what happened last episode... That says a lot. And even the episode before when Vanessa was killing, I mean, this was actually hard-hitting, hand-to-hand kind of cutthroat killing.
Right. This is interesting to me because it reminded me in the best way possible of almost like a comic book. It was like, pow, wham, whop. Like, well, I kept picturing all those noises because they were like tossing each other. And Sarah's favorite part, kicking and everything they did was like such a solid movement.
It was, to me, it was a great fight scene, especially in the beginning when they really unleashed Roper on hits on Vanessa. I thought when he slammed her head into the table.
When he hits on as in says he's going to have sex with her?
No, when he hits on. Oh, like physically hits her. Oh. Hits her. Ooh. Slams her head on. To the table, like, I thought it was done where the angle where you see that shot from almost, like, below. But then I did almost find some comic relief in Roper's actual killing when it was, like, stab from Vanessa, kick from Ethan, stab from Vanessa, like, prepare to kick from Ethan.
That was a tag team kind of deal.
Well, now they do commit homicides together.
Yeah.
That's something they have in common, right? They do each apart, now they do them together. And she said it, Vanessa said it when they buried him, we're homicides together, you know? She even made light of it in a dark way.
Well, imagine if this had been her first kill this week. That I feel like that's why we had her last week. Imagine if this was the very first time she killed somebody. Ethan would feel partially responsible and whatnot, so now she's kind of been there, done that, for lack of better words.
This isn't the event that made her a murderer.
Right.
And I'm glad
she's more desensitized to murderers now.
We knew it was going to happen. We knew Roper wasn't going to stick around one way or the other. This wasn't the main character. But I'm glad that it happened now, and I'm glad that he took the initiative to be the villain. Because it's one thing for villains to talk and talk, and Evelyn Poole's been talking and talking, building up to this season finale stuff. A lot of these people, Hecate has been talking and talking. Roper, because he's a secondary villain, could take the risk, because when we lose him, we lose him. He took the risk, we knew it was going to happen, but it was good to see it early, quick, boom, done, moved on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if that
now that
is
has to happen to Rusk.
If that's the case about Roper, then why did we have Roper involved in this show in general? This is the last we see, hear, or whatnot from him. What was the point? Was it just because we needed something, a secondary big bad for season two? Or is there something more to this?
I think we needed the first thing. You remember the first scene, the Mariners Inn at the end of season one. We obviously needed that. And then I think Roper is what ties Rusk to the show. And we still don't know how Rusk works out. Because Rusk is now, I don't know if he plays a larger role, but he alluded to it today, talking about, you know, following Ethan wherever he goes and he's on the trail. And Rusk is into the supernatural game. So we needed Roper to get to Rusk. If Rusk was just like, hey, I like you for these murders, you'd be like, well, wait a second, why? But Roper is the living guy. They've got Rusk with the Mariners in, and you're like, okay, that's the case that got Rusk on Ethan's trail.
True, and also Roper was questioning Ethan right in front of Vanessa, and I think Vanessa's very inquisitive enough to be asking Ethan later on questions. What was that man doing there? Who is he? How is he tied to you? So I think it's just to have another person also question who Ethan is and what he is.
Right, but if we call Roper and Rusk, we're not working together. In fact...
No, I'm not saying that.
No, I know you're not, but I'm saying, in fact, when Roper was asked by Rusk about it, Roper pretended to have no knowledge on the matter. So I'm just interested because throughout season two, I thought of them both, Roper and Rusk, as secondary characters on an equal level. And now I'm thinking I underestimated the part that Rusk is going to play in all of this. I thought him and Roper would kind of, at some point, either team up or it would go hand in hand and they would both be trying to go against our protagonist. But now I think that Rusk is a bigger role than I thought he was to start, and Roper kind of just fell by the wayside a bit.
Yeah, and Roper was just the catalyst to get to Russ.
Right.
Yeah. If Russ could come in and said, well, I'm on Ethan's trail because I'm solving these murders, you'd be like, well, okay.
Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which one? But we know from Roper, we know Ethan's power, which is obviously very clear now. And then from Roper, we get Rusk. And who knows what the hell's going on with Rusk in the future?
I know.
And we need more of these. We talked about it. We need more human characters, more mortal characters. We lost one today in Sen Bene. We'll
don't
talk
say
about
that.
We can't get there yet, and we have stuff to say.
Yes, lots of things to say.
I will not be able to do the rest of this episode if we start talking about that now.
Okay, before we do all that stuff, I'm sorry, ladies. last thing that I noticed in the Roper scene, and feel free to jump in if there's anything else, but really small, but really big, is when Vanessa first comes down the stairs and Ethan immediately grabs her hand. They reach for each other's hands. It's like, that's kind of cute.
Yeah.
In a weird, messed up way.
No, it's like they're protecting each other, and that's what they should. They've been through a lot together.
Right, and that's the Vanessa I know and love. She totally stepped up, and she kicked his butt, and she saved Ethan's ass.
That was 5 stabs. Did you not count?
A little aggressive.
Like too aggressive?
Maybe. Maybe a little aggressive.
It got the job done.
My pet peeve is when you see in movies, especially action movies, and it's like they do the one stab or the one shot, and I'm like, haven't you learned? Shoot them a couple of times. Make sure. So, like, but this one was a little past that point.
Overkill.
So, 3 times you're golden, 5 times you're crazy?
Yeah, one time. Come on,
then
watch
you're
a movie once in a while.
Okay, got it. Now that's the Sarah scale.
Something like that.
We know.
0 to 5. Okay.
All right.
Oh, and if you hit 10, she's turning it off. She's done.
That is just getting ridiculous.
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea how to transition from that. So, in the show, from Roper, from the cottage, we see Victor come up and they go to Sir Malcolm's house. I'm going to leave that one for a second. I don't want to get to Sir Malcolm and all that yet. And the team yet, the crew yet. I want to go to some of these secondary characters. The first one, and because we've been talking about him, is Rusk. Let's go to the street before we go in the house. That scene between Ethan and Rusk. And folks, it is not Ethan Chandler. It's Ethan Lawrence Talbot.
Talbot.
Mr. Talbot.
Born 1857 in New Mexico. What do we make of this? We knew it was coming, but it's nice to get a little more exposition.
I did know it was coming. I didn't know it was coming this quickly. It kind of hit me like a ton of bricks when Rusk just opened his mouth and said that as Ethan was walking away, which I loved that I was surprised, even though we have been so geared up towards this. We were gearing up towards this, and I was still surprised, which is awesome that the show was able to do that.
And I'm glad that, again, with Rusk, I'm glad that Rusk did it and not Roper. Roper knows the past, didn't out him, or maybe Roper outed him in some way to Rusk, but I doubt it. But Roper knows the past, never said anything, at least to us. Rusk doesn't know it, figured it out. Probably not impossible to figure it out. He's a detective, he's what he does, but little things like that can't be discounted because it shows that Rusk is a force to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
A mortal one who cannot, you know, step to Ethan when the full moon is out, but he's still a force to be reckoned with, and we have to take him seriously.
True. And it also just shows, if Rusk is capable of finding out all this information and tracking him down from America and from Scotland Yard, all these places that he's gone to, who else is from America is going to go after Ethan? Who else is going to find Ethan if Rusk could do it?
Daddy.
Daddy.
Yeah, I am waiting for his father to come into play. He's been mentioned too much. But the only reason I feel like I tolerate Rusk is because I'm personally interested in Ethan's history. Other than that, I don't know if it's the way it's written or the way he's playing it. I find this character annoying.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like his scenes drag on a little for a bit for me.
Who, Rusk?
Yeah, Rusk.
Well, yeah.
But I'm like, so the only part that I find justifiable in him is like, oh, I do want to learn more about Ethan's past. Please get to it.
But also, sorry, to add to that, Ethan tells the audience a lot more of his character in backstories every time he tells a story. A tribe back in Arizona, or like the Apache Mountains, or whatever, you know, like Ethan himself always, every episode, gives a little bit more about his background story personally. So to just learn a little bit more just from one thing from Rusk, it really doesn't add a lot. I mean, we get his last name, but still hasn't added as much as Ethan himself has.
I completely agree with what you were saying about him and his character. Every time he comes on screen, I'm kind of like, bummer. Why are you on screen?
He drains the mood a little bit.
He does.
Slows the story down.
But tonight I kind of had an internal debate with myself. Like, maybe that's the point. Maybe we're supposed to feel the same way these characters feel every time he walks in. Like, oh, man, we have so much going on. Really? You again? Like, I don't want to deal with you right now. Because I started feeling that way, and I was like, I guarantee you, Ethan feels the exact same way every time he sees this guy's face.
But when Russ does something like come up with a real name, that's the guy to worry about. Yes, he's the secondary guy. We got all this supernatural. We're fighting for the world and Vanessa's soul and everything else. And, oh, there's this guy who wants to beat this murder rap on Ethan. Come on. But wait a second. Watch, lo and behold, that's the guy who succeeds. You know, that would be the ultimate, you wouldn't call it red herring, but that would be the ultimate bait and switch. Mm-hmm. But if they did it right and Rusk nabbed Ethan as opposed to something going on with Evelyn or whatever, you'd say, well, hot damn, this will change something.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also, what I am worried about what Rusk is capable of doing, because he did have that whole speech about there's something wrong with this Grandage place, there's phantom limb, and there's a feeling. And it's not just Ethan that, I mean, yes, he's personally tracking down Ethan, but it's everybody else that also lives there. So I'm more worried about what's going to happen to them, because once Rusk puts Ethan on display and reveals his secret, he's going to go after the rest of the crew there. And I'm more worried for them.
I'm going to throw a couple things in from the chat. I wish I could throw out more of your guys' names, just flying by too fast. Everywhere from Stormy to Jay Daly to Steam Power God. Like, tons of you guys, thank you for commenting. Some people are not convinced that Roper is dead.
Ooh.
Being that he survived a very vicious attack before.
Fair point.
They think that maybe somehow he's been able to survive this one. Ooh. Not so sure about that, because I kind of think stabbed to the heart typically would get hurt.
That was a human
and the
death.
In the chest.
No. Yeah, and that was a very human death.
On top of that, they're talking about how this conversation with Rusk mentioned Ethan being followed by the police. How is this going to imply where Ethan ended up going?
Mm-hmm.
Was he followed? Will the police show up? Surprised it didn't happen in this episode. Some people are. Maybe it could happen in the finale, because supposedly he's under close surveillance, but we haven't seen them.
Big Brother's watching.
He just pulled a little Yoda. Surprised it didn't happen in this episode. Some people are. I get it. You guys are very wise.
Inverted syntax. All right. Mm-hmm. It's very much Victorian England.
Mm-hmm. But I think those are great points to make. In terms of him still being alive, just to step back to that, that would really, really be interesting, because then this is somebody we have to seriously worry about. He not only survived one attack, but two. That's not an anomaly anymore. This is somebody who's got something going on.
Wait a second, though. They buried him.
Yes,
exactly.
Well,
no, we saw the grave. We can assume
that they buried.
I think they
didn't do a memorial with no body for this guy that they had to murder because he was going to murder them.
Okay, but say he was buried and say he comes back. I don't know.
Sure.
The only thing that would keep me from thinking that right now is Sarah, while we were watching the episode, was like, oh, he's in the house. He must not be supernatural of some sort.
He's human because he got through her barriers, but according to the witches, the talismans or whatnot weren't doing very well.
And let's look at how he can come back based on what else happened in this episode. Let's say he's dead and gone, which I think he is and I hope he is, but it's okay, maybe he's not, I'll play with you, but let's say that he is. If he is, and if Ethan or Vanessa walks into that room that Victor and Sir Malcolm currently find themselves in, Roper's back.
Mm-hmm.
Not real Roper, but Roper enough to drive you insane, you know, I would imagine. So we may not have seen the last of him. Even if it's not the real Roper, it's just the hologram version of him.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But
I think he's dead and gone, because that was a very human death, stabbing over and over again, and an actual burial to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we never established that Roper could be someone who could change, which would require a more drastic killing. Also, if you guys want some spoilers or some histories, check out the chat. I can't read all of your comments, including from, like, Brianna and whatnot, because I think there's too much of a spoiler.
It goes away. Oh. The chat goes away.
Oh, well. Yeah. Well, then Brianna, you're going to have to leave actual comments outside of the chat.
Well, you're going to have to tune just in label live them, next time.
Yeah, just label them spoilers, because, like, I'm not going to read them.
When you say spoilers, though, what do you mean? People have access to next episode?
No, spoilers more about the legend of certain characters, oh, okay, or yeah, where their names are being brought from, or the histories of them in other areas, stories, films, franchises, whatnot. So I don't really want to read them out loud because I think that they might give too much away.
The name Talbert sounds so familiar.
Like, Talbert.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds like from Jane Austen.
I'll tell you what she says later after the show.
Like Jane Austen type of.
People are Googling feverishly right now.
You know what we'll do for you guys who want it? You can tell me and I'll tweet it out and hashtag your name, Sarah, because you don't have a Twitter. Then you guys can know the spoilers.
Fair enough.
All right. Okay, I'm interested to hear, first off, what the chat folks have to say about this, and the three of you. Mr. John Clare.
Sad eyes. I felt for him tonight. I mean, I feel
fell
for
or
him.
Felt?
And, no, felt. It's like, I feel for him every episode, but tonight to be actually thwarted.
My emotions fell.
By someone he was, what we were led to believe, actually building a very seemingly innocent platonic relationship.
I loved it to hate it. I mean, it's really sad. I didn't want this to happen. But the whole thing happening, I will tell you folks at home, we watched this together. And here's me giving credit, Roxy.
I see.
Listen.
That. Well, because if you didn't, you knew we were going to call you out immediately.
I'm just saying.
Sarah, no, you were going to call
us. So we're watching this together, and the three of us, aside from Sarah, the other three of us are like, oh my God, what's going to happen? John Clare, they're going to go see this construction. This is weird. Yeah. And Sarah goes, what if it's a trap?
To what
you did see this one.
And you know, 2 minutes before it happened, I was pointing at her, I was like, that's the key, you did it. Sure enough, 2 minutes later,
right.
I'm excited.
It's a great camera shot,
this
too.
Is the reason, and I don't think I pulled out of thin air, it's just, I didn't understand why she was being so nice. When the last time we saw her, she mm-hmm. was literally like, why am I scared of you? And then we saw her go to her parents. We also saw her have a conversation with Mr. and Mrs. Putney, and I was like, she did not go from being scared of him to trying to be friends and explore the house together.
And this woman, like, for 20-something years has been blind and has figured everything out. You can't walk around a new room kind of, you know, blind to kind of get used to whatever is going on in there. You suddenly need an escort?
How long has this plan been in the works?
I think since the day that they met him.
Since the episode they talked about the tunnels, having building a whole nother entrance. Remember, they talked about it. They wanted to funnel people through the tunnel for displays. That was it. That was the episode.
But remember, the day that John Clare got the job with the Putneys, and Mrs. Putney was like, not verbatim, but was like, what are you doing? Why this guy? And Mr. Putney was like, that is our fortune. That is the mm-hmm. back to our fortune.
Absolutely. I agree. First of all, I was the first one to say that I didn't think that the Putneys were good people.
That's true.
Of them, Mr. and Mrs. But I always thought that the daughter was good, and I thought that she would be on our team. I'm not curious how long Mr. and Mrs. Putney have been in on this, because that's definitely day one. I'm curious how long she's been on this. Because to me, when she said she was afraid, was that a transition moment to her? Did she go crying to mom and dad and say, who is this man and what's up? And then she changed? Or has she been like this from day one? Because if she's been like this from day one, I have a really hard time believing that.
I think
that.
She switched.
Mm-hmm. I think she must have switched, which breaks
switched.
My heart. I feel heartbroken for him. I remember we sat on this panel a few weeks ago, and Sarah sat here and said, listen, I don't want them together because I think she's too good for him. And I thought, yeah, that's a really good point, actually, because, yes, we love him. We've grown to love him. But he is not as good of a person as she is.
Or was.
Or was. I would like to believe that she has that in there somewhere. If she doesn't, and the whole family is like this, oh, my God. Get us out of there. Get us out. Mayday.
I think it just adds that some people who are just scared don't really know the gravity of what their actions are. So, yeah, I think it was her just acting scared and off of her parents. Like, what should I do? Okay, I'm going to help you exploit him and have the business flourish.
Can we talk about this exploitation for a little bit? Because right now they've set him up that he's in a cage and they're going to show him to the public and make lots of money. I'm sorry, I just don't understand how that they're going to get away with this. Like, popular attraction, you can't chain people up.
You shouldn't.
No, because if you look...
Legally, you shouldn't
either.
They
reference, like, freak shows and, like, circus and stuff. But those people are, like, portrayed at least, typically, as there by choice. They're not, like...
Look at something. Real stories like The Elephant Man.
I felt very Phantom of the Opera.
I personally don't feel that Mr. Claire has a monstrous enough appearance to warrant that.
I agree.
He's been walking around the streets. People do stare at him, but he's never been tried to be captured before. Like, he has made his way through life, going through different things. And not, like, if you're telling me that he looks like the Elephant Man, like, was in a cage and there's a whole story, like, I don't think they're on the same level appearance.
I just meant logistically, how can this happen in this day and age
the
and
same
run
principle.
At this time? It's that same principle.
Same principle.
None of this is going to matter because we've talked about this time and time again that everybody goes into this frickin' wax museum. Everyone we know has been
in
here. It's going to be, it's only a matter of time until one of our people, Vanessa, Ethan, any of them, Victor even, goes in there. They're not going to let him be in this cage. Actually, it'd be interesting if Victor walked in and did let him remain in the cage. That could be a weird side story. But I do not think he could stay in there forever. Somebody's going to recognize him and cause an issue. But until somebody we know recognizes him and causes a problem, he'll stay there because it's been proven in society that people, when they're looking at something like this, they... like to stare, and they think that it's all part of this game, and it's not their lives. It's messed up and it's twisted. But I wouldn't put this past somebody. This to me isn't something that's like, ooh, that's not believable. It's very believable, and it's sick, and it's twisted, and it won't stay forever, but it will stay for now.
And let's do an assumption. If we're going to say, and I kind of agree with you guys that Lavinia switched. Lavinia did not start this way, and she switched. If you switch, you can switch back.
I have something in the chat, though, on that point.
Go for it.
Three says that in her monologue, she referenced having so many boring conversations, which would imply that it has been going on for a while.
Yes.
And that this, maybe, if it was switched, it happened longer than just last week's episode. Also, going about on the putting people in cages, people recognize that people were... They said albinism, but I think they
albinism.
Mean albinism in freak shows. And so they said that that might be good enough, being that he is so pale. I don't know.
Maybe, but...
But I think it just shows any disfigurement, anything that's not the full norm, that what they're led to believe is normal, is automatically there for judgment and mockery.
And couldn't they change his appearance, cut his hair, do stuff like that to highlight the stuff on his...
They could. And in fairness, he's not technically shackled up. He's just in a prison cell.
Yeah.
Guys, think about his scars. Think about the temperature of him. They could know more even than they're letting on at this point. Maybe... that when he walked in the shop, I mean, I'm just really throwing something bold out there, but maybe they actually knew him from a previous life. We don't know how much they know about who he is or what they could learn. They could know that he is the undead. I don't think that that's true as of right now, but they know something's up. They feel his temperature. They see his scars. They know he is more than just a looking strange person. I don't know how much they know. It'll be interesting to find out.
You just gave me an insane idea that... Dorian met Brona, and then Lily happened, and Dorian met Lily. What if the Putneys knew
whatever
the name was? Absolutely. And then, you know, Caliban happened, who has become Mr. Claire, and then they've never let on that, wait a second, we recognize this guy.
Exactly. Maybe they knew him in his previous life or something of that matter, especially because we don't know much about his previous life. We don't know how they've been investigating a lot of different situations. We don't know how he originally died. Maybe it was in a horrific accident that they recreated the scene of. Maybe that's why we see him so interested. I'm throwing a million things out there, but something is up. They know something, I think, because it's true, his visual appearance, it's a little off, but it's not like, holy crap. At least not to me.
and I don't think it's been normalized to us because we've seen him for 15, 20, you know, episodes or whatever. It's just not that crazy. Now, who knows what else they can get and what else they have access to and who else they're going to do, whatever. But I agree with you. There must be something else because his visual appearance is different, but it's not different enough for them to make a fortune, you know, devour the meal of success, whatever the metaphor that Mr. Putney used. Well, okay, but you better do something more than just John Clare. Mm-hmm. He's
interesting. I want to know who else they're putting in the cells.
Exactly.
Yes, that's my thing.
That's my question. Who else do you have?
If we think Caliban or John Clare is not scary enough, they have more people up their sleeves, not just John Clare.
It's a good question, though. I'm curious for people, Marissa, maybe you can answer this, that have read all of the Penny Dreadfuls and whatnot. Is there other characters you could think of that would fit well in the cell?
Or you guys hide.
There's tons of characters.
There's a bunch.
None that, I mean, unless they're going to put Ethan in there under a full moon, there's not a lot that have the appearance yet of scare.
I just mean new characters.
Yeah. There's tons of potential.
I'd love to see Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
You would?
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Okay.
Throw him in there.
Cool.
Interesting.
He needs to be shackled.
Okay, another interesting location for us before we work to some of the main ones. Let's talk Dorian. Dorian finally, well, I mean, he obviously did before, but Dorian calls out Brona.
About time.
Thank you.
So now for anybody at home who was confused whether he actually knew who she was and we were sitting.
He knew.
Thank you.
He knew from the first second.
Absolutely.
But my thing is, did she know who she was? Because she
says, judging by what she's been saying.
Or Lily. It makes me think that Brona was more aware of who she was a long time ago, and now she's just playing the Lily side.
If you think about Proteus sat there and said, ship, boat, wife, started very quickly to have these memories when he's out in the real world. Now, we really don't know about John Clare and what memories he has. He hasn't come clean about that particular thing. So we've had both ends of the spectrum. Lily very clearly says tonight, in my opinion, that she knows. Now, how long she's known, I'm not sure.
Speaking to that point, though, Lanavis 1 mentions also that while Lily and Proteus were from one human being, Caliban, Mr. Clare, is from multiple bodies. So maybe he does not have that same capability of memory.
Right.
Or like a specific person's memories.
And there's something to be said for Brona, Lily, talking about not just the line, you know, Brona, or is it Lily? It's what she said right after that. Or is it something adrift in the middle? I don't remember what the word was, but she effectively was like, or is it something in the middle? And it's like, wait a second, not only do you recognize your old self or can at least allude to it, you also recognize the transition period, which is weird. You're not just like, oh, I was this, now I'm this. You almost say, hey, I'm a bastardization of the two.
She said, or is it Lily now? That was the next line.
And then she said, like, or something adrift in the middle. I can't remember what the word was.
Okay.
But she used the, you know, in the middle to imply that, wait a second, I may not be one or the other. I'm a weird mix of both, which I think is a really deep thing for her to say.
Well, that's so strange, though, because one or the other, she is fully Lily now, because who the heck is Lily? Like, Lily is who she is. It's not like she took another person and merged with it. There might be bits and pieces of Brona that remain, but that is what makes up Lily.
But to Dorian's perspective, she is Brona. That's the thing. You know, from his perspective, it is Brona, and she may think she's Lily, but that's her point, is wait a second, not only, you know, relationship-wise, I'm a weird mix of both, maybe, but physically, she's like, what am I? I'm not a normal human being anymore.
My question is, why this type of personality trait for Lily? Why is she so, like, gung-ho over men, and that power and domineering over men? Is the superiority factor from her past life that men were always dominating her, and now this is her chance to dominate men?
Look at what Brona did for a living.
True. Mm-hmm. Very true. And that's why I asked. It's like, because get on your knees. And then it's like all these literally controlling of men.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, when she Mike Tysoned him, I lost it. Like that.
Biting off your ear for those who don't know.
We already. Go ahead. We already saw her murder somebody. So it wasn't like I was that was unexpected or the most gruesome thing she had done. But I don't know. After watching her with Caliban last week, I kind of felt like maybe that was the route she was going and that's where we're going to take this. Now it's like she's going to be put all men down and she's just going to use them all. And we just have to know that about her. So my poor little heart can no longer expect her to be with one man.
Or is she maybe phrased differently. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it was so callous tonight with Dorian. And she knows that because she kind of knew his secret anyways, I think, you know, she called him my beloved immortal. She knew what was going on.
Oh yeah.
Because she knew that, she knew that when she, whatever she'd do him wasn't going to matter. But it was so callous and cold and calculated. It's not just that she's going to put down men. It's almost predatorial.
Yeah, that is my biggest question. Because I think it can go one of two ways. I feel like Brona Lily, whatever, is searching for the strongest partner she can find. And then she wants to make them her subject. I don't know how much I'm worried about her relationship with Dorian. You see that she knows in the final shot, it's obvious that he's just come from where his picture is hidden and he's opened the door. So she knows where that is. She knows where she knows where his portrait is. And I think that that's a weakness for him. I'm wondering, like, are they trying to make them an actual pairing? What about her last pairing? What is she going to do about Mr. Clare? Or is it just to climb the ladder, and when she climbs the ladder as high as she can go, to stand on it alone? Like, I don't know what her motivation is besides to dominate.
Am I crazy to think that she could go on kind of a revenge tour and go after John Clare and go after Victor Frankenstein for wrongs real or perceived?
I don't think you're wrong.
No,
I don't think at this point she has a limit.
Yeah.
I don't think we found what she really finds. I don't know what her weakness is. I guess that's my biggest thing. It's like, I don't know what her weakness is besides maybe. Or is it Ethan? Is it her vanity? Like,
or is it just a male in general who is willing enough to stand against her? Because right now, everyone is succumbing to her and her superiority issues right now. But if there is a man strong enough to actually face her, that might be her weakness.
Which could be Ethan again. But the thing is, with what she's doing with John Clare, it's so different because we could tell tonight, afterwards, he felt all kinds of guilt. He was, like, messed in the head about all of this. He was messed up. And Dorian, none of that. He was like, this is a new experience. Finally, somebody who's at my level.
Turned on.
Right, that kind of thing. So those two relationships are going to be very different. I just don't think, I think, Sarah, it's very much the ladder of what you said, to climb this ladder and then end up on top by herself. That's the dream. I don't think she's sitting there thinking, who can stand next to me? I think she made it very clear last week, down with men. Down with any of these men.
But this show does have very powerful women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also to add to that, last week when she was talking to John Clare during that amazing scene that she had, she was also just saying that we can rule together. So I think her main objective is to find someone else to be on her level and seek immortality with and in the end control everybody and have that domineering factor. I think she didn't find it with John Clare. She's finding it with Dorian.
Mm. All I know is Victor's work's getting sloppy.
Yeah.
Victor himself is getting sloppy.
That's what happens when you're addicted to...
Well, he's a mess.
Yeah.
I love him, and I would appreciate for everybody to stay positive about him.
So let me
save his soul.
he's destroying himself. That's the sad thing.
That's what I want to ask Roxy, because he's the good transition point, because we're going to get down to Sir Malcolm's right. And talk about Senbenny and all that. But Victor's kind of the pivot point on this because of Brona. What do you find appealing about him?
It's hard to describe. I think that he's in a lot of need of help. So I can say that off the bat, that I'm not sitting here thinking that he is doing so hot right now. Anybody who's thinking that is probably not doing so well themselves.
is this one of those cases where you want to, like, you know, get the guy fixed?
Unfortunately, I hate to say it, but I think this is one of those I want to fix it up cases because I think he's deep down a really good person. And I think he's somebody who's an artist and a creator. And I think he's tormented. And I think he's haunted. And I think that he has nowhere to turn. And he's had a lot of loss. And think about how many of these people he's tried to create and hasn't been able to. And all these things that have happened to him, I feel for him. Now, what he's doing is something that back in the day wasn't treated the same way. Now, if you talk about something which we can call on the show, it is heroin. He's shooting up heroin. Now, there's rehabs for that, and there's people talk about it, and it's a thing. Back then, they don't even really quite know what they're dealing with at the time. So it's a completely different demon.
It's not a drug. It's a recreational thing people do. Absolutely.
Right. And he's sitting there, and he's thinking, I want to escape. I can't live in this reality anymore. This is a nightmare. I'm going to do this. So I feel for him because it's a one-way ticket to somewhere really bad. And we know that. And I'm worried that we'll talk about Zimbetta in a bit, but I was worried he was going to be the one who ended up.
Victor.
I'm worried about him. I'm really worried. I think we all should be.
Well, Victor and Lyle, we'll talk about it in a second again, but that was a weak team.
Right.
Let's be honest about that.
But do you think Victor is too far gone, or do you think there's still hope left for him to clear up his problem?
Too far gone to do what?
To just function in general. Is he literally to the point where he can't be saved?
And that's where I'll butt in. Right now, Victor's at the point where I don't feel like he's helping. I feel like he's just hurting all the problems. He did like a little bit of doctor work today, but he is a character who, when we put them in situations, I look at him as the weak link. All of the characters bring their own baggage. His baggage is growing. And on top of that, he is physically does not seem fit, which I feel like is affecting his mental capabilities, and I don't know. He needs to redeem himself a little bit because right now he's a danger to all of the group.
Let me tell you why I disagree. Because he was the one who was deemed the most trustworthy, and he was the one they told where they were going to, and he was the one who didn't tell anybody. And then when they needed to be got, he went and got them. Now, do I think he could be more of an asset than he's currently being? Absolutely, but I don't think he's the weakest link because he's not supposed to be the muscle. That's not his job. He's supposed to be the one who's an artist, a creator, and trustworthy and loyal, and he's doing all of those things. Now, who he's hurting the most is himself, without a doubt. I don't think he's affecting everybody else as much as he's affecting himself.
I do think he is affecting other people.
And listen, the weakest link...
he's brought them into a mess that he created.
Whether or not he was the weakest link going into the end of tonight, now that he is in that room with his demons too, he is going to become the weakest link if he can get out of the damn room. I trust
besides
Sir Malcolm. Lyle didn't even count. I trust Sir Malcolm to make it out of that room. I trust Sir Malcolm to finally figure it out. I think he was stronger than what else. You know, we see Gladys kind of lose it on this. I think Sir Malcolm was probably stronger, at least in this mental capacity to fight back.
Even after being pricked or kissed or whatever?
Yes. Okay. Well, actually, that's a good point, but yes, I believe so. Victor, I don't have the same thing. I guess it would depend what the images, the holograms of Brona and Caliban and Proteus do to him and what they say to him.
And does he get a needle in there or not?
I'm real worried about Victor.
My thing is, this might be an early prediction, because we did see in last week, Zimbetta literally snapped Sir Malcolm out of his illusion under the enchantment that he was in. I think when Sir Malcolm snaps out of it, he's going to snap Victor out of it, and they both save themselves. Boom.
Pen drop.
Okay, girl.
That's what's going to happen.
Okay.
Early prediction.
More from Sir Malcolm's place, and really generally the sort of Sir Malcolm story and stuff like that. Okay, Marissa. All right.
You see her.
I see you.
I have a prediction too, but I'm going to save it for predictions.
Okay.
I have more.
Let's do that. Anything else that we are missing from Victor, Sir Malcolm? And we've got to talk about Zimbetta. I don't know if you guys want to save it for the castle. But at least before the castle, we see that touching scene with him and Ethan talking about, A, Zimbetta. We know about the marks on his face. We know what he did. Roxy, do you want me to tell the audience what you asked us in the viewing?
No, I really don't. Here's the thing, though. If you look back on this episode, we it was kind of apparent that Sendai was going, we were going to lose him.
Yep.
Because we found out so much about
Sarah's
him.
Sarah's freaking out right now.
Or we look back on this season, he's talking more and more. We found out about his scars. We finally find out a little bit about his backstory. Am I saying that I want him gone? Absolutely not. Am I saying that there's not more story to be told? Absolutely not. I'm just saying that it was kind of... All right. I don't even know if I can continue. She's just nodding no so
Sarah,
fast.
Are you disagreeing or are you just struggling to cope?
Someone on the chat gave me hope earlier and they were like, if Roper could survive an Ethan attack, then Sinbene should be
same
able to
here.
Survive.
Right, okay. Same here.
I need,
I'm staying with it.
Hold
it
on.
Was a
I need to make
comment.
A public service announcement to those in the chat right now. Sarah is of a weak emotional state
yes.
tonight. She's struggling with Sinbene. Do not encourage this poor young
Why
lady.
Why couldn't... All right. If Sinbene looks at Sir Malcolm and says, know who you are, I wanted him to do that with Ethan and the wolf and... And somehow that to, like, snap, and I would be like, oh, mind blown.
I wanted him to target the wolf. Like, don't eat me. Knock down the door with your super strength.
Why didn't they do that?
My problem was Sinbene didn't even fight back. He just, like, let it happen.
Let me.
He can't hurt his fellow companions.
I get that, but he can at least try to resist Ethan
attacking him. I think if Sinbene had resisted, Sinbene might have gotten Ethan. Werewolf Ethan. Mm-hmm. I think that's the point. Sinbene, and I don't think we'll ever know now, but that dude had some kind of strength or power. I don't know if it was... I don't think it was supernatural, but that dude had some kind of something going on
right.
that was something else.
Okay, yes or no. Not what you want, but what you think. Is Sinbene alive? Yes or no?
No.
I want to say yes.
I said not what you want, what you think.
I think yes.
Okay.
I can't answer that.
And listen, not only do I think no, I also want no. When a character dies, I want a character to die. As bad as it sounds, I love Sinbene. I wish we had more of him. But everything lined up tonight, just like you said, to have him die. He died in such a way that was so significant because of that Ethan story. Ethan tried to kill himself. Sinbene prevented it. Sinbene gave himself up, sacrificed himself literally for Ethan, for the greater cause. You can't bring him back now and say, hey, just kidding, I'm here now. Kill him. It's better this way. He goes out in a weird way, honorably. Leave it.
It is honorably.
Ethan he really could do did. So much more.
Exactly.
I know.
Ethan really pulled that trigger, though.
Yes.
He really pulled that trigger and was ready to kill himself to save Sinbene.
There's a lot of misery going
Why
on.
Why do you say that?
Have we or talked about Ethan face? And Hecate and...
Mm-mm.
Nope.
All of that.
This is when to do it.
I was going to be like, because we have to... I think that goes into it. Like, why he was willing to pull the trigger.
Because of
that she. Yeah, well, she brought forth that she thinks he has the capability not just to be the enemy of... The enemy in this circle, but to be... She said it so eloquently, and I can't quote it, but she basically was like not to be the warrior of the god above, but to instead stand beside...
Greatest ally.
Lucifer. So she implicated that he could actually choose whatever side to defend. And I think when he said yes, that motivated him later to be willing. Because... It was someone, like, confirming his deepest, darkest thoughts. Mm-hmm. That, like, that could be a possibility for him to go down a road that was not led by good, but completely by evil.
So you think that he, on purpose, didn't kill himself? You think that he was wanted his life more than he wanted to save Sinbene's?
Oh, I'm talking... I think we're talking about different things.
No, we're not. I'm
talking
about...
He pulled the trigger, but I think he missed because Sinbene moved his arm.
Right, but if he was thinking... If his deepest, darkest thoughts were somehow brought out by Hecate, then wouldn't he value his own life more than Sinbene's in that situation?
No, I think he fears his deepest, darkest thoughts, so he was willing to kill himself because he knows that he could be that person.
Oh, so you don't think he was being persuaded. He was now in a place where he was afraid of what he could actually do.
That was the realization of when he blacks out.
I think
he knows the potential, how evil he could be.
And not even that, but I think just the potential of responsibility. And isn't that the difference between Ethan and Vanessa in one regard? And Sinbene mentions it. You need to tell Vanessa everything. Whatever he said, she takes the world of your pain. She takes on your pain. She takes on your stuff. Vanessa's that person. She makes it hers. She's not, whether you want to call it, I mean, she doesn't fix it, but whatever you want to call it, she takes it on. Ethan does not, Ethan's removed from a lot of stuff. And so when Hecate is telling him all this stuff, to him, that sounds like responsibility. And maybe that's a superficial way to say it, but I think Ethan's like, I don't want this. I literally have no no goals. What was the conversation with Hecate? What was the word they used? Not goals. It was... Help me out, live chat. It was you know, she was talking about dreams, destiny. Goals, whatever the other word was.
Chosen profound destiny.
And I think
impunity.
And I think that that Ethan just doesn't want that for himself and whatever. And when he sees that and hears that, he says, I literally don't want that. I would rather die than take that on.
Hmm. But I think that whole conversation between Hecate and Ethan was very telling because it also says evil is seductress. And then that also, I think that also plays a role into why they kiss each other. It is seducing, but it is in a way entrancing each other to luring everyone to the dark side.
I don't think we know everything about this kiss yet. About these kisses in general. I'm getting some sense of luring and making some power.
I think that was Hecate's move against Ethan, like luring him to the evil side.
I said this to you guys. I just felt like it was such a high school move as she went up to Vanessa and was like, I kissed him and I can still taste it. Like, that's your man and I got him. It was like really kind of bitchy.
Have you seen this in practice?
No, it was like mean girl status.
Okay.
It kind of was. Like, at this, obviously, a really immature level, she was in Vanessa's face about it. Like, that's your man. I kissed him. I had a conversation with him. I really think that that was there.
I think it's just Hecate's character in general. She tries to get into the minds of other people. She was trying to get into the mind of her own mother tonight.
That's a whole different story. We should talk about that. I mean, I think it's a little bit like the same conversation we've seen for the past, what, 5 episodes with them?
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'm creeping up on you, be prepared. And she's like, back down. And she's like, but I'm doing it anyway.
That was amazing.
That's exactly how it goes.
Yeah. All the condescension, though, I will give it to Hecate. She's planting that seed of doubt within her own mother. So, and we could see Evelyn she's starting to questioning herself. So Hecate's, whatever she's doing, and we know she's trying to overthrow her mother, but it's somewhat on some level working.
There is no loyalty among criminals. There is no honor among thieves. There is no teamwork among witches. I mean, yeah.
Yes. There is no heroin in the room for Victor to shoot, so he's going to not be in right a bad now. Place.
Someone did say they thought it might be mercury and not heroin.
Oh, really?
Huh.
Mercury.
Or something.
Yeah. No, but he did say in season 1 that he's like shooting up heroin. That he has an addiction to heroin. So
mercury would be like even more lethal. That's interesting.
Mercury, like even in air form.
Just thought I'd
like,
shoot
literally,
it out
if
there,
mercury is exposed to the open air, you could get poisoned.
Well, I don't know what
you don't even have to shoot that up. You'd be dead.
I don't know what the. I know heroin, the benefit of it. Sorry, benefit's the wrong word, but why people like to use it, that feeling that we see him feel tonight with that face and et cetera. I don't know what mercury does.
I read it wrong.
Mercury can
morphine
for sure.
Yes, morphine.
Thank
definitely.
You, steam powered God, yeah. for correcting me.
In the chat, they're probably quickly. Like, damn it, Sarah, you're making us look terrible.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, morphine, absolutely. Morphine, but it's not one and the same. Even you
completely different.
But for
mercury makes you actually feel physically sick.
No, I'm not talking about mercury and morphine. I'm talking about the difference between morphine and heroin.
Yeah. They're different, but for our purposes, with what Victor means for the rest, they are one and the same because each one of them, whichever one it is screwing him up.
Right. Yeah. Like, absolutely.
So it does. Let's get a little bit to Vanessa at the very end. Her doll calls her a murderer. Creepy,
like
cool,
very Saw-like.
I'm just glad I didn't have this mask.
Who's not waiting for the eyes to open?
I have a question.
Who didn't think that was going to happen?
I have
Come
a question.
On.
If Vanessa punches her own doll in the face, does she get a bruise, or is it only Evelyn who can mess with the doll?
What happens if Vanessa kisses her doll?
Then Bobby gets really happy.
Why me? Why? Why me?
Because you're...
I was thinking...
I was so nice tonight, Roxy.
Damn. Sorry.
So the rest of the show.
Yeah.
I was so
just saying, you're doing well. You're doing well. I got prematurely defensive there. I did. You know, sometimes it happens. I've got a good prediction when we get there.
I think, God and then kissing her doll.
No, but that was an interesting line, too, about the God addiction.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
Right.
Victor.
But, yes. But in all seriousness, I do think if Vanessa tried anything against that, it wouldn't work because it is under Evelyn's magic.
Okay, that makes sense. I was just curious because that doll not seems hers. To have such specific, you know, really specific. You do something to this portion of the doll's brain, and you know, Gladys, like we saw a couple weeks ago, hurts in exactly that portion.
Yeah. It's Evelyn's doing.
So,
where we leave this?
Where do we leave this?
A bunch of people went to a house on the wrong day because they were specifically told by somebody not to go in, and that's what got him killed.
Real world London.
Yeah.
Third
so
night.
Vanessa now is going to add more religious guilt because she didn't listen to Simene, and then he died. Just saying.
My thing is, come on, Vanessa, you're supposed to be smart. Why go to a place where after now you know who Evelyn is and what they're going to do to you, why go by yourself when you literally have a mansion full of guys
that is the
to
most,
back you up?
That is the most frustrating but also show moving along trait of Vanessa is she is so damn stubborn.
I get it. I mean, so she's stubborn. A one-woman army. I get that. But come on, Vanessa. You literally have guys that are there to protect you who will literally lay down their lives for
she
you now.
She don't need no guy.
And she didn't do that. It's like, why go
well,
by yourself?
She's got
the guilt.
She's got less guys. Malcolm is already indisposed. Victor has been indisposed. Simbene is gone. Lyle is essentially gone. She's down to Ethan.
I think that the honest answer is that is, what is the worst case scenario? She dies.
She kind of has wanted to
die. I don't think she cares.
I don't think that is the worst case scenario.
I think she, no, I'm saying what she is thinking is the worst case scenario. The worst thing is I don't make this out alive. I don't think she's thinking about what actually could happen if she goes by herself.
Well,
I think she's over.
As David has mentioned, we're not mentioning the book. She has read the book at the Cutwives. Maybe she is feeling empowered by this knowledge.
Has she read the whole book, though?
You know.
She might have read portions, but has she actually read the whole
thing? I think
when
you see the book, you assume, she knows.
Well, you could read chapters of a book and finish it.
It's not like a toilet book. She's not like picking it up, putting it down.
It's not like the Reader's Digest or
That's
something.
What Instagram is for.
Anyway.
So she does have the book influence.
Are we going to
that.
Predictions?
We are but going to predictions. Still. Let's do it.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Roxy, would you like to start, or because I'm being nice to you tonight, I certainly can move elsewhere if you're not prepared.
No, it's fine, because it's not as good as I built it up to be. I just think that, I believe that Simbene is dead, unfortunately, and I think that, what does that mean? That he had a lot of dying wishes that we're going to have to carry out. So one of them being Ethan talking to Vanessa and coming clean to her and telling her everything and letting her take his pain, or Vanessa not being part of this one-person army anymore and taking a step back and realizing, okay, what would Simbene do kind of thing. So I think that his death is actually going to be the catalyst for a lot of good change.
I like it. Sarah?
I will say that a lot of our flash forwards focused on a voiceover by the lovely Vanessa. I think that it was directed at her doll. I think that's
so
who
creepy.
She was specifically talking to a lot. I think half the lines we heard were actually lines from the doll, and half the lines we heard were lines to the doll. I think a lot of that voiceover was actually a conversation. I'm curious about who lights the fire on the floor. It did seem to be in the shape of a
devil star.
Devil star.
What's that called?
Pentagram.
I'm not sure. That's what I caught in that 1 second I saw it. I'm wondering who lights that, because it's very interesting if it's Vanessa's power that lights it if she does use what she's learned from the book. I'm also thinking that Ethan's gonna break out of this little room they have him in. I want him to go downstairs, and I want him to side with Vanessa, and I want them to win.
Yay. If he's able to break out of the room, how frickin' annoying is that he didn't just do it?
Or Hecate lets him out of the room to toy with him.
Mm. And then blends into the wall like she does.
Mm-hmm. The hard thing is, I don't think...
Find me a mirror.
Yeah, the hard thing is, I don't think Ethan, in his wolf form, would care about anyone. So, as much as we want him to pair up with Vanessa, he could easily turn on Vanessa, too.
Well, that's the point. They let him kill Simbene. They lock him in when the full moon comes out, and when the full moon leaves, when that thing moves on, Hecate says, okay, let's play with him now, because he's powerless for us.
Right.
Okay. All right, what you got, Marissa?
Okay. I don't want Simbeni to die, so I might eat crow next week, but we'll see. I want to say Simbeni lives. And maybe as soon as this might be turn into a wolf, as awesome that would be, to pair up with Ethan, they help take down, because Wolf of God, now friend of the Wolf of God, take down, that's, like, really good and out there.
Do some wolf stories have, if you're killed by a wolf, like, it's not, to my knowledge, when you are a vampire, if you kill somebody and whatever, you can come back as a vampire with the vampire blood in you. Are wolves like that at all? Is there any way?
If you get bitten by a wolf, you could turn into a wolf as well.
Really?
Or, like, a werewolf. Yeah, you could. My thing is, it might be way too early and too soon for Simbeni to ever turn within a matter of minutes.
You have wolf knowledge, sir.
What?
You have wolf knowledge.
What?
Is it possible that Simbeni could turn into a wolf?
They haven't really clarified this in this show. Because, like, for instance, is it a wolf bite or just interaction with a wolf? Because Simbeni gets actually bit, and then we don't know if he fully dies. Also, like, supposedly sometimes if you get bit by a wolf and you survive, that's when you turn, versus, like, when you get clawed by a wolf and survive, then maybe you don't. It really varies from
a lot of different stories. Yeah, a lot of different stories. You can get bitten and turn, you can get scratched and turn.
You have to have the gene. Like, they haven't really handled in this show what specific werewolf rules they are playing by.
Okay.
But in my opinion, if you think about it, if you go off the American Werewolf in London, he was scratched by a wolf and he turned into a wolf. Mm. So that might be interesting. I don't know. It is very out there, I will admit that.
It's very different than the Wolf on Vampire Diaries.
I think Vanessa's on this path of killing. She's obviously going to kill Evelyn. I don't know in what way, whether it be killing because Ethan has now shown her how to shoot a gun, or all these knives that they're sharpening in tonight's episode.
There were lots of knives.
There's a lot of knives, and yet we haven't seen one of them after all that. And then, my prediction was Sir Malcolm snapping out of it and then helping Victor snapping out of his trance. That's going down.
I'm going to go a different direction. And this is pretty far out there, but hey, it's predictions.
Want a drum roll?
Sure.
That was me being nice this time.
Thank you. Drum roll. All right. Let's talk Dorian. Vanessa, not that she needs help, but she certainly does. It's not a slight to Vanessa, but she's going to need some help. Victor is indisposed. Malcolm is indisposed. Simbeni is gone. Lyle is irrelevant and now gone. She's only down to Ethan in there, at least for the current time being. We have now learned, and we all knew, but we have now explicitly learned that Dorian is immortal. Boy, wouldn't an immortal help out with Vanessa?
He's not.
Well, immortal besides the picture.
But he's not a part of their main story. They have all the Grandage people and the Hecate
and here's the thing.
Coven.
We have been talking.
Dorian's over here.
Exactly, because we have been talking on this show about how Dorian is this separate story. We can't figure out how they link up. Brona's a link, but Brona's not with the old people anymore. I don't know how it will happen, but I could see Dorian coming back in or taking the steps. I'm just saying.
You know what?
I think Sarah disagrees a bit.
I think she does, but Dorian also likes things. You would have to get him something that is you'd have to give him something that he wants. He'd have to be in it. Something would have to be in it for him. And I think Hecate is pretty damn beautiful and could either entice him by accident or he could see and seek out Hecate.
That's also true. Thank you for everyone who comments on YouTube. You guys are amazing. We actually asked the question our last after show, what would the main story be for season 3? Who would be our villain? And a lot of people commented maybe Dorian would be the main antagonist for season 3.
Right, we talked about that briefly on the show.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Because last episode they're building up if he's an evil, somewhat evil character.
You got a lot you can do with this guy. That's the thing.
To take you a step further, because all he wants is the next new challenge, the most exciting thing. What is more exciting than the devil? I don't know. And we know that
immortality,
boy, girl, alive, dead, doesn't matter. Dorian doesn't matter. So maybe he goes straight to the top.
Evil is seductive. John Clare said that today. Dorian seduces and gets seduced. I know it's a big stretch, but I'm just saying, right. You got to do something with this guy. You got to link up.
And one more thing, the title of the episode, And Hell Itself, My Only Foe, is actually from a John Clare poem. Mm. The title, I Lost the Love of Heaven, which is very interesting. I'll just read the first stanza of the poem. I lost the love of heaven and below. I spurned the lust of earth below. I'm sorry. I lost the love of heaven above. I spurned the lust of earth below. I felt the sweets of fancy love and hell itself my only foe.
Well, I guess, think about that one, guys.
read the full poem. I won't read. But yes, this title is off of John Clare poem.
A couple quick notes for you guys at home as we wrap this up tonight. If you haven't already, hit subscribe. Thank you to everybody in the chat role for doing all that you do. Next week, I know we have a lot of non-American viewers. Y'all probably know this by now. Anyways, but July 4th is the holiday next weekend in America, Independence Day. The 5th, that Sunday, a lot of us are out of town. We're trying to figure out the scheduling here. So we're going to keep you guys updated whether we do this on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday of next week. It's going to get done shortly. You'll be able to see it. But if you want to keep up with the schedule, when we can figure it out, when we're all available and all that stuff, you can tweet us if y'all use Twitter. And if they do, Roxy, Twitter, where can they find you and Sarah?
You guys can find this side of the table at Roxy Stryer.
I do the chat.
Yes, she does. Sarah did the chat.
Yes, you do, honey. Yes, you do.
You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV.
And I'm on Twitter at Bobby DeMuro. Again, we'll keep you guys updated when next week the season finale gets done. But obviously, we have to do this because holy crap, this is getting good. That's it this week on Penny Dreadful for these three lovely ladies. We'll see you week from today or so.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.